If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there were so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you've come to expect. After 4 years, this week's guest returns for another fantastic conversation. Eli Knight joins us to discuss why today's abundance of information about BJJ is like drinking from a fire hose, what he believes are the most valuable things in jiu-jitsu, why he hopes jiu-jitsu never makes it to the Olympics, and a ton more. Here's the Roll Radio with instructor at Fit to Fight Charlotte, content creator at BJJ Fanatics and Knight Jiu-Jitsu, and third degree black belt, Eli Knight.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Here we go.
We don't have many returned.
No.
Returning guests.
No. Usually it's an emergency, not this time.
Eli, thanks for being with us. Thanks for coming back on the show. Right before we start recording this, I asked you, can you believe it's been 4 years? I mean, our original episode, we recorded in August of 2020.
Wow.
So just almost 4 months in. Almost 4 years ago, you were up as on 13.
Wow.
As we were
that's
doing
crazy.
This. And I literally listened to the episode, and I do have to say, I sounded like an idiot. I mean, completely, you know, like pretending that we know what we're doing. But it was a good time. Can you believe it's been 4 years? I mean,
no, I can't. It's been flying by. I think everything since 2020 has flown by for like several different reasons, but I think it has. It's been crazy, and everything's just been exploding too. Now everybody has like 4 podcasts, you know. So it's, I think that's another thing too. But yeah, that's cool, man. It's good to be back on here with you guys.
Well, thanks for doing it.
How have you been besides aging and getting smarter and wiser and all the fun stuff?
Well, the aging part's definitely true. I don't know about the rest, but since then I've moved out to Charlotte, North Carolina, so I'm no longer in Kentucky. I lived there my whole life, and then about two years ago I moved out here to Charlotte. So now I'm just living, training out here. I teach some classes at Fit to Fight out here, and then I teach different places. I'll do a class here, a class there, train at different places, do a lot of cross training at different, there's so many good places out here, and so many, and the community is for the most part fairly open and accepting, about cross training and not too cliquish, not too, to whatever protective or territorial. There's definitely that element, but I don't participate in that. I don't have time for the politics. I don't have time for the different camps that.
Does that even still exist? Like in a larger footprint thing? Like, is there a thing really? Like, I mean, 10, 20 years ago, that was very present. Like when you and I, we were starting, like I remember having conversations. You can't go train over. You can't go talk to these guys. These are from the different team. Like, but today, like, I feel like literally everything is online. Everything is accessible. You can learn any jiu-jitsu from anybody, from in person to digital. Why would anybody have the notion of saying you can't do this? Or you can't go try to do guys.
No, you bring up all the important points. Like it shouldn't be about I don't want you to go train with these people because you're gonna get the wrong information or bad information or you're gonna give our top secret information away, anything like that. It's not really that. And even if people are saying it's that, there's only one motivation that would keep anybody from going to train with anybody else. And it's like, well, maybe two. One is maybe there's I don't like these people over here, so I don't want any of my people training with them because I have a personal vendetta with them, which is kind of silly. I mean, because it should speak for itself. If I have a student that wants to go train in a different place, even if I don't really care for that team or that group or that whatever, I should let them experience that on their own. You know, I could give them my opinion, but at the end of the day, I would give them my blessing. It's like, dude, train where you want to train, who you want to train with. And if I'm confident in the way I teach and the way I train and the environment that I've created, I should be confident that you're going to come back home, you know, that you're going to stay with me. You're not going to jump ship. Or, I mean, even if you go to somewhere else and you go experience that and you decide, you know what, this place over here is a better fit. Well, I should give you my blessing with that too, because I'm obviously not providing what you feel like you need at that time. So, I mean, there's no good reason at all. Other than that, it's just money. I'm scared to lose students, so I'm going to forbid you to go train anywhere else because I'm scared that you might leave me, you know, and I'm going to miss your paycheck at the end of the month.
Sure way to get me to go.
But yeah, exactly. Wouldn't that speak to the fact of the confidence of an individual who says that? Like, I want your money. I don't want you to go there because I don't know. Like I'm really, this is like the $1 million question in jiu-jitsu, right? And we probably pissing off half of the population right now. But like, if you teach well, if you have well-organized system, if your academy is to what is desired, then why would somebody go somewhere else?
Yeah, there's no good reason, man. Just insecurity. Straight insecurity. And anybody that, I mean, yeah, you can make up whatever reason you want, but at the end of the day, like that's just severe insecurity why you wouldn't want your people to cross train, you know? I mean, like it's because like you said, there's no secrets. There's no, you know, there's no, your students are guaranteed watching online digital information. It'd be silly not to. It's silly not to, right? I mean, when you, like you said, you know, I had VHS tapes, you know, like several years into training that were mostly in Portuguese. It's like you don't have good access to information back in the day. You know, I was checking library books on judo out, you know, and there was just nothing. And to think that fast forward, there was going to be resources like there are now, not just online instructionals and online content, but so much for free, like on YouTube and whatever. And now, granted, it's a little like drinking from a fire hose, because if you're brand new, you know, and this is why I try to help people. What I think is helping, you know, I'm like, look, if you've got a question about something and you want more information, more resource material on it, so you're going to go home and get on the internet, or you're going to get on your phone and get on YouTube and try to find out more about this sweep, this choke, this position, this detail, because you're a new person, you know. You know, let me help you with that a little bit, because it's hard to distinguish what's good and bad information in the beginning. But yeah, I mean, like ultimately though, it's everything is out there. Like right now, and the time it's going to take us to have this conversation, there's going to be 10,000 new videos about jiu-jitsu moves uploaded right now to YouTube and wherever else.
I mean, it's kind of crazy in a sense, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, are we leading in a direction where we not going to have to show up at the academy?
Just AI it, man. Just AI BJJ from now on. Yeah, just type in ChatGPT, like, how do I pass reverse De La Wormguard, you know? And, yeah.
I mean, it's a very different world than what we started with, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting to see, because it's kind of crazy when the trajectory of it. It's like there's a scarcity of information about this thing. There's enough out there to make it tempting and tantalizing to the people who have gotten a sample of it back in the day. And so then you search out more information and you search here and there and wherever. Now new resources start to pop up, and all of a sudden, you know, now there's, you can catch a seminar, you can catch this or that. And then some people start to put out information. Here's a book, here's a website, here's, you know, whatever. Then, you know, the advent of social media and the population of social media and the all these different online digital platforms and instructional resources. And so now it's just a deluge of information, and you got to sort through what's there. But now it's like, how detailed does that get? Who's instructional do I want when I go on to BJJ Fanatics and I look at, okay, I need to get, I suck at passing the guard. Where do I even start? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like some of the best guys in the world, honestly, may not be the best teachers. So mm-hmm. you can't really base it on that, you know? And that's what people, I think, you know, it's not to say that there aren't guys that are great. I mean, like Gordon Ryan is actually a phenomenal teacher, you know, mm-hmm. probably the best, one of the best in the world, and also a phenomenal teacher, but that's a rare thing. There's guys that are phenomenal competitors, phenomenal practitioners, can't explain it worth a damn. You know?
But even goes deeper than that, right? I mean, the way how we process information, how we analyze information, right? From person to person, that varies, right? Body styles varies. I mean, you'll take Cabrina and then you take Buchaja. I mean, those are two different body styles, and they can teach the same thing. And yet the interpretation was going to be very, very, very different between all of this, right? How do you dissect this information? I just had a interesting conversation fairly recently with somebody, and we came to these conclusions that as 20 years ago, there was no information available. We were hungry for, you know, a Black Belt magazine. That was it. That was the source of info, right? Yeah. Today, I feel like it's oversaturation of the information, and which one is better? Which situation would you prefer to be? Because you probably experienced both of them a little bit, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. And it is. I mean, I feel like for me personally, I like the oversaturation because I've got a lens these days. You know, I've got the ability to look at something and tell. But again, like, you know, for the white belt that's been training 6 weeks or 3 months or 6 months or, you know, whatever, the oversaturation is almost worse. It's overwhelming, you know? So it's like, how do you even curate that? How do you even like sort through and aggregate that information about, like, as I don't know what I'm looking at. I typed in how to pass guard BJJ and to YouTube, and I've got 10,000 videos to pop up, and I've got to figure out what's what, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, do I look at the view count? Do I look at the, you know, the likes and the shares, but or
even that is a skewed?
That's misleading.
Skewed. That's even a skewed thing because it these days is all about popularity. It's all about a marketing machine, not necessarily about quality. Like, and I'm not taking anything from anybody. Everybody wants to make money, but at the same time, you know, that all these things are very difficult to digest, right? So how do we move through this? How do we? What's the right thing?
A good question.
I'm starting jiu-jitsu today. And I come to you and I say, hey, listen, I don't know what to do.
Well, you just said it. They come to you, right? That's so they should be thoughtful about what they're doing rather than just jumping on and searching and looking around. They should come to you because you know that, you know, if somebody's 6'2" and 260, they're gonna need something different than somebody who's 6'4" and 180, right? You're gonna point them in a different direction. Somebody who's studied different martial arts or wrestled is going to need something different than, you know, somebody's fresh off the street. So
it also is such a big thing now, because the big conversation too, that's still going on. It's been going on for a while. Is like, you know, what, no, very few people, I'd almost say nobody several years ago, I'd almost say no one walks into a martial arts studio of any type and is like, I want to be the next Pan Am champion. No, you know, it's like, I don't even know what the hell Pan Ams are. I don't even know what worlds are. I don't know what the sportive aspect of this or that martial art look like, because there wasn't like that kind of exposure to it, you know. Now then MMA, the proliferation of MMA, that changes the complexion a little bit. Now you got people that don't just come in saying, I want to learn self-defense, or I want to learn a martial art, or I want to start a hobby. You got younger guys, younger athletes coming in, probably wrestled, and now they don't have an outlet now that they've graduated high school, you know, and they don't have that kind of outlet. So it's like, okay, grappling, submission grappling. Okay, that's tangential to, you know, what I was doing. Or, you know, I like MMA. I like, you know, maybe I want to be a fighter, you know, maybe I want to get in a cage and fight people, you know, and so I need to go learn this and that aspect of it because there's so much access to MMA. So, I mean, it's a good and bad thing, you know, because it's now you know, as an academy owner, you have to kind of sort out, all right, these are my competitors, these are my hobbyists, these are my, you know, older crowd, my younger crowd. This is, you know, people have different needs, and you want to be able, I think, to fulfill as many needs for as many different people as possible, right? But there's such stark contrast sometimes in those demographics. So then you kind of have to like figure out, well, what exactly can I fulfill to the broadest audience, to the best of my capability, you know.
Do you think the difficulty also comes from the fact that the diversity within jiu-jitsu has changed over the last couple of decades? And what I mean by that, 20 years ago, jiu-jitsu was, in my opinion, pretty simple. The way how it was taught, the way what was being taught, you know, we all learned, at least I learned, two passes and, you know, a couple submissions and all that, and we drilled them 50 billion times. Today, I feel like you look at 14 or 13 year old teenager, juvenile, orange belt, and his knowledge or her knowledge is, I feel like, broader than mine. The diversity of what is being presented is so much deeper.
Absolutely.
And when we talk about teaching this now, right, we have different people wanting different things. So like, we went from the pond of jiu-jitsu into like the ocean of jiu-jitsu, and, and how do we dissect this as instructors, right?
Yeah. What was I'm sure I'm going to mess this quote up, but maybe it was Bruce Lee, maybe it wasn't. Half the stuff people say, he said, he didn't say, but you know, he said, you know, when I started martial arts, a kick was just a kick. And then I found out that a kick is way more than a kick. And then, you know, now that I've been, you know, doing this long, a kick is just a kick, you know, it's like, it's like this return back to the thing. So I think about, you know, when you look at there's a simplified, you know, there's simple in the beginning, and then you start to peel back the layers and it's really, really deep and complex. And people like to kind of by committee make things even more complex in a way to try to pick apart every little detail and every little nuance of a thing, of a technique or a piece of thing. But then it gets back to the, you know, you can't lose sight of the forest for the trees, you know? Mm-hmm. So then at the end of the day, so it's, you know, I keep talking about this for some reason. I don't know anything about, very little to anything about Greg Sauter's or ecological jiu-jitsu or whatever, but I do have an appreciation for what my interpretation of what he's doing is kind of keeping it simplified in the direction of where he's going with it. So it's like, rather than saying, okay, here is this 24-step process of how to pass the guard, you know, and then there's multi-directional passing, and I'm going to put my hand here and I'm going to put this, and then I'm going to step and then step and do this. And it's like, how about if instead we say, I'm behind the legs. All right, I'm here in front of the legs. I need to get behind the legs and get chest to chest connection for a topside pin. Okay, now that's your directions. Go do that and see what happens. Right, and so then the rest is kind of little details. It's like, okay, why couldn't you achieve it? Well, the knee was in the way. Okay, well, let's remove that knee. You know, okay, well, I couldn't pass this. He was making this connection. Okay, well, how do we defeat that connection? And so, you know, at the end of the day, it's like whoever has the best ability to navigate and in the lab, you know, and you don't have to have the most, the winningest most team. You don't have to have the most victories in whatever kind of environment. It's like, if you are presenting, good foundational elements and making it applicable to the situations needed by your students to the biggest degree, I think that's going to be that's the proof right there. That's the biggest proving grounds. For me personally, like I try to keep my finger on the pulse, which is so damn hard these days because of all the information constantly being thrown out there. I try to keep my finger on the pulse as best as possible with the innovation of jiu-jitsu and, you know, even the modern aspect of it. But to me, like what the most valuable thing in jiu-jitsu is still, is I think about I always call it the four modalities. The four modalities for me are sport, jiu-jitsu in the gi, no gi submission grappling, MMA, self-defense, right? That last one is problematic. Oh, they're all problematic. But if your foundation of your techniques can with as little variation as possible, check those boxes, those will make the most valuable techniques, you know? And now, granted, you know, the more rule restrictive it is, the more variables you're going to have to apply to it. Mm-hmm. And the more like unrestricted it is, the more variables. But like, if I'm passing the guard, or if I'm, let's say that I'm gotten a mount position, I'm looking to control it, I'm looking to submit from there, how different is my technique going to look in gi grappling, no gi grappling, MMA, self-defense, you know? And if I can put if my self-defense aspect of it is so grossly unrelated to my gi grappling, then one of those is a problem, right? Because now I'm not training the way that I'm going to do it in life or how I'm going to fight, right? And there's problems with the train how you fight thing. I hate that phrase personally, but there's still the element of truth that is there in that is that the foundation, whatever you do repeatedly, is going to stick the most. You know, you're not going to rise to the occasion. You're going to default back to your level of proficiency. So if the thing I'm doing the most has so many different elements than this thing over here, I'm going to have to shift such a hard gear that's not going to materialize, you know? So,
but what you're describing right now, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding this, but you're describing this all-inclusive jiu-jitsu, essentially, like learning the skill that it could be applicable all across those four pillars that you talked about. Now, big challenge that many might see with this is that if I go compete in IBJJ, I don't need the other three pillars. Nobody cares about the other three pillars. Right. And if I want to win world championships, then I shouldn't care about the pillars because that's not the environment that I'm fighting. And then, you know, if I am, let's just say, police officer, law enforcement, I can care less about gold medals. I just want to protect myself. And right. So like, again, which one, I think this is the challenge in what we are experiencing today in jiu-jitsu, because we do have these pillars. They are driven by the environment that we find ourselves in, right? And environment dictates what is happening, what we do and how we do things, right? I mean, mm-hmm. what we teach in law enforcement or self-defense or even, I don't know, anti-bullying for kids, it is mm-hmm. drastically different than yes. what we would be teaching an athlete to win yep. ADCC or IBJJF World Championships. Right. I mean, and this is where these divides come in jiu-jitsu, where one academy will hyper focus on one, but they will have to ignore the others because that's where the inefficiencies come in. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you process all of this? I mean, well, that's a lot, right?
It is absolutely. And I don't think that you can really have a place that will be able, unless it's a huge place with a billion classes and a billion instructors, but I don't think you're going to find too many places that are going to equally prioritize those things. My feeling about it, at least just recognizing those four modalities and trying to boil it down to those four modalities, is that just the essence of movement, the essence of efficiency of movement is going to be present in every one of those environments. Now, yeah, absolutely. The way that I'm going to pin somebody in a no rules environment where I have to consider not only what the surface we're on, or are there other people around, are there going to be weapons, are there going to be, you know, whatever. So that's a very different thing than if I'm in a gi on mats. And it's definitely just one person and there's a time limit and there's a point structure. So, I mean, yeah, the way that those things are going to be performed, contextually are going to be different, but fundamentally, weight distribution, you know, structural, like how you break down a structure, how you build up a structure, you know, those are the elements I'm talking about more than anything. It's like the way that you manipulate another human body and the way you manipulate yourself in a, in that kind of environment. Those are the things that I think are that need to be identified on every one of those four modalities. The rest are variables. The rest are just like, okay, let's contextualize this. How is this going to change? But, you know, if I go in and the way that I look to pass a guard in IBJJF standards, I'm treating it as if this person might be able to punch me in the face. I'm not going to be a very good guard passer because I'm going to try to prevent myself from getting into different positions where I would be susceptible to strikes. That would be ridiculous. But as far as how, you know, some things stay consistently the same though. If I really want to get on top of somebody and pin them, I've got to get past the line of their ankles, then the line of their knees, then the line of their hips. I need to get chest to chest and the underhooks, you know? So I think that for me, like that's what becomes valuable because, well, the reason, the necessity of it for me is that the most beautiful thing, the most powerful and impactful, important thing in jiu-jitsu is the way that it's trained, you know? And that's that you can't go in and train boxing or kickboxing the exact way that you would do it. You can't train like as high intensity, right? Because you're going to sustain a lot of damage. You're going to cause a lot of damage. Jiu-jitsu, you know, the good thing about it is like you can train it as closely as you would in at 100%, you know? I don't recommend that, but you can train it closer to 100% than you can train boxing or kickboxing or Filipino martial arts or whatever your other style is. So now to be able to do that, and that's what makes you such an efficient fighter when you train jiu-jitsu, I think, because like you felt that stress, you felt the pressure, you felt, you know, the resistance and all that, and you had to kind of overcome it. So, I mean, that to me is why it's so important to be able to train with that kind of intensity is not the right word because that kind of gives off the air of like you should go in and just try to murder each other every time, but you want to develop the efficiency and the sensitivity and all that stuff, you know. So even if you are a cop and, you know, or you are somebody who's going to primarily just be concerned in what would happen if I'm fighting somebody in a, you know, outside in a dark alley on gravel, you know, with, you know, other strangers around, they might have a knife, whatever. You know, there's still some things that are going to be that I can train repetitively without having to be like a step-by-step disconnected process. Because you look at like old school, not even old school, that doesn't mean inefficient, but there's, you look at traditional martial arts that are not effective. And I'm not going to say any specific martial art, but it's like, here's the step-by-step process of how to defend somebody swinging a stick at you. And it's like, okay, step here, put your arm here like this, you block it, you grab their hand, you take their stick away, right? And it's like, it's never going to materialize, not because that it couldn't work, but because you can't train it effectively, you know? Like, to me, that's what jiu-jitsu is about, the most effective and efficient training, because it's messy. You know, it's messy and you're trying to like, you're navigating through that chaos and you're feeling the pressure and everything is got built in pressure testing. You don't have to make it too artificial, right? There's a very little artificiality about jiu-jitsu compared to a lot of martial arts that were trained in a vacuum, you know?
At the same time, what you're describing creates all these complexities, right? This is recreating these environments one to one to one, and repeating them is almost impossible because all these variables do change. Our partners change, and even if we have the same partner, they might react differently, right? Is that one of the reasons why jiu-jitsu has so many layers and it's so complex?
Yeah, I think that the layers and the complexity of it is because it's identifying what's inherently complex, you know, and you're having to peel back the layers. I think mm-hmm. those levels of complexity are there, but jiu-jitsu peels them back and exposes them rather than creates more of them. You know what I mean? Like I feel as if there's martial arts and even whole systems out there that add layers of complexity because they're training overly cooperatively. They're overly speculating about things. They're creating problems where there don't necessarily have to be any. And I think jiu-jitsu exposes a lot of that. But you know, I'm a little prejudiced because, like, you know, I prefer jiu-jitsu over like everything. I think that it has more answers for and more solutions than any other martial art personally. But I feel like that's what it does. It identifies and it extrapolates those complexities, and it offers really great ways to navigate those areas.
With this big evolution that we are discussing and that we are experiencing in the last 5 to 10 years or so, do you think that jiu-jitsu is shifting from this martial art notion into a semi, if not professional, sport?
I don't think there's any question that by this point the sportive aspects have eclipsed the self-defense, at least. You know, maybe not the martial art, because like martial art, I think has an allowance for the sport. I think some of the most valuable aspects of martial arts are the sportive aspects, not the reality based aspects. And as for that, I know it sounds kind of weird, but you think about how many boxing gyms do you go to? And boxing obviously is a martial art, right? I mean, I would say boxing is a martial art. I would say wrestling is a martial art, but you don't go into too many boxing gyms where people are only going into a step-by-step process of like, here's 1, 2, 3, here's, you know, there's these do. Yeah. They're obviously doing combos, they're obviously doing pad work, but you're definitely going to see an abundance of sparring, right? You're definitely going to see to whatever degree an abundance of sparring. And the most popular by far, you don't go into places that are just training boxing for a martial art. You go into places that train boxing because people want to be a boxer. People want to box, and that's a sport, you know? So the sportive aspect of things, I mean, even from like gladiator times, you know, I mean, look at the gladiator games. That was a sport, you know, it wasn't genuine, warfare, you know. They were making a spectacle in a sport. And the reason is because that's the way to train it. You know, that's a way to isolate and train the combative element of it. So, you know, same with judo, with wrestling, with all these things, it's that sportive aspect. So, you know, yeah, it is becoming more about the sport in that sense, but the sport can have a wide variety of rules placed upon it. You know, I think it's not, you know, even the most effective aspects of jiu-jitsu that apply to self-defense, in my opinion, could be, you can make the argument that they are more sporty in the sense that we're going to go in and what's going to make us the best in a self-defense situation. Now, this is notwithstanding the ideas of, you know, of like situational awareness and, you know, all the, you know, precursor things, you know, I was trying to avoid the situation. I was trying to de-escalate the situation, mm-hmm. all that stuff aside, when it goes hands-on, the thing that's going to make me the most effective person is the thing that I've done the most under duress, under pressure. Mm-hmm. And the way that you pressurize things, it starts to look pretty, you know, pretty sportive, you know, for lack of a better word, it's competitive. You and I go into train and what are we going to do for the most part? We're going to grapple, you know? And it's like, okay, so that we can do it the longest, we're going to remove strikes, you know. Tell you what, I'm not going to bite you or gouge your eyes, okay? How about that? Like that'll let us train longer, right?
Taking all the fun away.
Yeah, right. We're gonna eliminate a few of these street rules so that we can, because that's what, you know, that's what it is. If you look at straight grappling, you know, because it drives me crazy. I'll put up a video and it's always the people who you can tell they don't train anything. Because, you know, they can't possibly. Oh, yeah, they can't possibly train anything because I'm showing, you know, here's a knee on belly technique. Here's how you pin from knee on belly. Here's an arm lock you can do. It's like, well, what if he just reaches up and grabs your balls right there? You know, what if he bites you? What if he does this? And it's like, okay, dude, like you're missing the point, but it's not even worth explaining to you how far off you're missing the point because you don't even train. You don't even have a foundation to be able to have an argument from, you know. But it is that though. It's like, you know, back in the, that, and that's why certain techniques became, you know, illegal in competition. It's like, it wasn't, you know, it's like, well, too many people were getting catastrophically injured and not able to train anymore. So we're going to mitigate these injuries by eliminating certain aspects of techniques or moves, you know, and then boiling it down to its essence. You know, we can still do a lot of different throws and takedowns even, but especially on the ground, you know, you can pin me, I can pin you, I can go for submissions. You tap out of recognition that the next step was going to be, you know, was going to cause damage. So you tap me to let me know, you submit to let me know. That's why it's the most cliche thing in the world by now, but jiu-jitsu is like chess. But the thing that people, I don't think, mention enough is that one of the main reasons it's like chess is because the king, you don't ever actually kill the king in chess, right? Mm-hmm. Checkmate is the next move was going to kill the king. So the submission is checkmate, truly. You know, it's this, I tap because it's like, I've got nothing else to do. I can't get out of this. You checkmated me. You didn't break my arm. You know, I'm not unconscious yet. You know, my leg's not broken yet, but the next move, it was going to happen. So I recognize that, you know.
A lot of layers, a lot of complexity with all of this, you know. Do you ever sit down and think about it, like, quietly in your own mind as what this is going to look like decade or two decades from now, when both you and I, we are on the wheelchair and Gary's probably 6 feet under by then? I'm old
forever. Damn, Gary. That was just such an unnecessary dig.
Yeah, I think I got 6 years on Thomas, and he acts like it's
there is 60. A lot of passion here, okay? We sit across from each other and see each other every day, so.
that's a good friendship right there, Man,
do you ever think about it, like, what this is going to look like? Like, where this is, I mean, we see it, where it's going. And if you've been long enough, you know, around, you see the trajectory of what the possibilities are. Even like thinking, you know, when I was starting, Worlds and Pan Ams or even larger competitions of that nature were not accessible. Like, I live in the Midwest. I couldn't fly to California to experience any of it. Or if I did, I had to save for a whole year to do that, right? And today, one, all of that is by far more accessible to everybody. But not only that, you know, you look at ADCC and you know, who's number one, some of these organizations that really televise this. This is becoming by far more accessible. And the sport and the art and, you know, this umbrella of jiu-jitsu is consuming more and more attention and is providing a very healthy vehicle for many, 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 many people out there. Do you think about it, what this is going to look like?
Yeah, I do quite a bit, like in different aspects, for sure, from a technical level all the way to an accessibility level to a popularity level, you know. I think about, like, you know, because it's odd. It's still not as much as like a, you know, traditional sport like baseball or football or soccer or anything like that. But there is viewership now of submission grappling that from people who don't train, you know, which is like, that's a fairly new convention. It's like, usually, you know, for a long time, the only people that would watch it are the people that are hardcore all about it because they train it and they do it, you know. Now you have, you know, people that don't touch, their feet don't touch the mat, and they're watching, and they can tell you about certain grapplers and even certain grappler styles. And, you know, hell, now they have like fantasy leagues, and they have like betting on grappling matches. I just saw Craig Jones started some online online betting thing for grappling matches. And, you know, so it things like that are making it more mainstream. And I think that's been some people's vision and some people's desire is to make it more mainstream. Brandon McCatherin just did the season of season six now of the PGF, the Professional Grappling Federation. And I think that the way he's really approaching it, he's worked out more bugs from that thing every year. And it's this year it was in Vegas. I mean, he's got a place out in Decatur, Alabama, where he trains, and he always did it in his gym. And now this last season was out in Vegas, and it brought in big names. I mean, hell, you had, what's his name? Zoltan from Five Finger Death Punch, who was a big investor and made this into this giant event. and, you know, as a spectacle, and you got people that are attending and watching this thing that, again, they don't even train, they don't do anything, any martial arts at all. So that's cool. I think that aspect of it is very cool. I never want to see jiu-jitsu in the Olympics personally. I think that would be a bad thing for jiu-jitsu.
So from one side you say, that you want for this to be popular, you know, mm-hmm. and ADCC and PGF, these are all good things, but then Olympics is not.
No, Olympics, in my opinion, it's not. I think now I want to see all the major things be popular, but I don't want to see one. I don't want to see a standard. I don't want to see this is the gold standard, because what will happen is it will become judo. And I don't want to see jiu-jitsu become judo. Judo is fantastic. It's great. But a lot of the coolest things about judo, like, they don't exist in Olympic judo. And now you go into, you know, 90 probably something percent of any judo academy, and what are you going to be doing? You're going to be doing Olympic judo, mm-hmm. with all the rules and all the conventions of Olympic judo.
But so let me pause you here for a second. Okay. Yeah. You stumble upon something very interesting, right? Because many, many people out there, at least the ones that we've talked on this show, they actually complain about there isn't a unified set of guidelines. So forget about rules, but just guidelines, from a teaching perspective to competition perspective to what students is expected to know. There are some academies that will reward belts or rank on attendance. There's others have a higher expectation. Some have curriculums. Others don't have curriculums. Some focus on self-defense. Others focus on sport and competition. And because there is no unified overseeing body over jiu-jitsu, we have these diversities. And listen, many will say this is the beautiful thing about jiu-jitsu. It doesn't exist anywhere else. But then again, there is a price that we pay for this. And this is all these inconsistencies, right? So, and I agree. Judo specifically, and I love judo. Judo specifically has removed certain things from the umbrella of visibility for the purpose of entertainment, right? And then it just dissolved in a sense, right? And like, I would even say it's not existing in this country. Like, it's just, it is what it is, right? But are you sure that we don't want to have unified rules system in jiu-jitsu?
I personally don't, because I like, you know, sometimes I'll watch an EBI event and I'm like, man, this is a really cool rule set, you know, and mm-hmm. I really like this. This might be the best rule set out there. But then I'll watch something like, you know, there's a ton about the IBJJF conventions that I just don't like. I don't like a lot of the rules. I don't like a lot of the regulations. I don't like a lot of the just politics, if nothing else, you know? So, and I think that's one of the things that makes me feel like I don't want to see, because if jiu-jitsu got into the Olympics, first of all, it'd probably be gi jiu-jitsu, right? It wouldn't be no gi jiu-jitsu, or, you know, unless it got so popular in the gi jiu-jitsu that they expanded and started allowing it. But I don't, you know, that's a ways off. So, you know, then now you're going to have, what are the standards you're going to probably model it after? It's probably going to go by IBJJF, since it's still the biggest organization. And, you know, and then once the Olympic Committee gets a hold of that and then brings on board whoever to, you know, it's only going to get more and more rule restrictive, and it's just going to be, I don't know. And the worst part would be like, okay, well, that's, if that becomes the pathway to being a world champion and an Olympic champion, you're going to have more and more places that are going to, like, you know, do only that. You know, I don't know of any events personally. I know that Fight to Win was for a while. I don't know if they still are. They were trying like, a judo format, you know, cause they would have like their gi jiu-jitsu, they'd have their gi grappling, no gi grappling, and they had actually judo. On some of the Fight to Win events. I don't even know if that was a thing. I don't think it really took off.
I'm not even sure if they are still around. I mean, I haven't. I know
Fight to Win. Yeah, they are. They're
sporadic,
not
events.
Maybe not as popular as they once were. But I don't know of any judo events that aren't going by the like the judo, the Olympic judo like standards. So that's what I mean when I don't really want to see it in the Olympics. If I can have the best of both worlds and still have like popularity, because like I love to see different events with different rule sets get bigger and more popular. But I just don't want to see it becoming streamlined and people only practicing one very restrictive complexion of jiu-jitsu, because there's so much to it. You know, there's so much room for an EBI or a WNO or, you know, some of these other flow grappling for Kasai format, you know, for quintet mm-hmm. formats. Those are awesome, you know, and I don't want something that's going to threaten the environment, the atmosphere, to be able to allow things like that to be popular, you know, because there's people who thrive in those formats.
But then how do we maneuver through all of this then? Because again, you can't have a cake and eat it, right? If there is no overseeing body, then there is no strict pathway for all of this, you know, to coexist, right? Then everybody does whatever they want. And that's what we have right now. And that creates a lot of diversity and a lot of freedom, a lot of creativity, and creates, you know, definitely entertainment. That's most definitely. But
there's not much money.
Yeah. Yeah, but then
that's the problem. So, right?
What are you watering down then? You're watering down the income or the art, right? Something's gonna get watered.
Well, like we just had a Jason Rao on the show, like literally last episode, and he was talking about he's getting ready for this tournament and he trains very differently. He's getting ready for that one. He trains very differently. So like in order for you to get better, you have to really submerge yourself in these different environments that you're trying to succeed in. And now are we training different things now? I mean, are we training different flavors of jiu-jitsu now? Are we like, this is becoming really complicated, no?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely complicated. And I think you're right. I can't envision a perfect way to streamline it, because just fundamentally people aren't going to agree. So then it becomes, okay, well, why does it matter? Does it matter for growth and prosperity of the sport? Because if that's the case, then, you know, yeah, I guess maybe streamline it and make everybody have to, you know, restrict to one thing. But, you know, you see a lot of competitors that go out. It's just like, you know, there's, and you know, again, going back to what Brandon McCaffrey was doing with PGF, his goal was to make a professional event that actually monetarily rewards people with like decent purses. You know, I mean, you know, you can win the ADCC and what is like $10,000, something like that. So, you know, I don't know what exactly it is. I think it's $10,000 for if you win your division. But you know, it's, so, you know, you're not going to have even, you know, people winning these big, huge purses. Now, some of these more extreme, like, or elaborate tournaments, like the PGF was offering $100,000, for the team to win. So that's $20,000 per fighter on the team, theoretically, if there's five people. Now you divide that even further for alternates, yada, yada. And then there was other bonuses you could get along the way, you know? And so then you bring in, so then you get an event like this. So what does that require? It requires sponsors, and sponsors have to have some kind of guarantee that, or some kind of at least potential that they're going to get some kind of notoriety off of sponsoring an event like that. And, you know, kudos to Brandon, because like this is a huge undertaking. And he has a good team and support system around him to be able to put something like that together. But yeah, that's tough. That's tough. You got to have people with you know, a lot of time, energy, and if not deep pockets themselves, then access to people with deep pockets that are willing to jump in on that. So, you know what I mean? That's really what it boils down to. And also the prestige, you know, it's like, if you want to be a world champion in jiu-jitsu, well, what does that mean? It only means one thing. It means you won in the gi in IBJJF. Like,
and this is the interesting part behind this whole thing. It is the world champion is considered in a gi, which
as far as I'm concerned, they are not getting paid at all, right? I mean, there was a pro league in there, but the actual Worlds and Pan Ams, they're not getting paid anything for this. And then
sometimes
you have,
yeah,
I mean,
you're right. You got to get there too.
Mm-hmm. But then you have these professional events, ADCC, Who's Number One, Fight to Win, and so on, right? And the payouts there with the sponsorships and all the other things, some of these guys make pretty nice. They get a nice cut, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, when you look at what they're putting themselves through, I mean, granted, it's like, you know, nobody's holding a gun to your head and saying, you know, your only option in life is to go be a professional grappler. It's like, okay, you know, if you're costing your family, you know, money to pursue your dream, then that's, you know, to a degree on you. It's like, you know, okay, but it's at the same time, it's like, you know, the people who do sacrifice and put themselves and sacrifice on their own behalf to get to this level, they should have a pathway mm-hmm. to, you know, something like that. And, you know, granted, that's why I think that, the IBJJF, they're going to have to figure a lot of things out because they are you know, now you say ADCC champion to a lot of people that holds higher prestige than, mm-hmm. than world champion, you know, even though world champion classically sounded better, you know,
I don't know the exact numbers, but I am pretty sure that ADCC has a bigger viewership than IBJJF. For sure. I mean, mm-hmm. especially now than they signed with UFC Pass. It's like, you just exploded this whole thing. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and that's great too. But you know, it's like, you know, I think it's still nice to have, these other, I think that the bigger that some of these events get, whereas it may take away from the IBJJF to some degree, they're not hurting. You know, IBJJF isn't, they're not hurting enough to like go anywhere, have to make dramatic changes. They're making subtle little changes because they realize that, you know, that we can't, we're going to definitely start to lose and see some things go away if we don't allow heel hooks and no gi in IBJJF. So it's like, you got to make changes like that, you know? So, you know, they see those changes, they make them, but, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, you start to see things like, the popularity of ADCC and the viewership and the notoriety and everything else. And, you know, it's like, okay, everybody else has to take note. So, you know, even if it's not going to be, you know, a comparable rule set or a comparable whatever, if you want your event to be something and you want it to grow and you want it to turn into something, then you've got to have some kind of niche market, you know?
I'll put you on a spot. So I'll put you on a spot right now. So, Olympics, big no. However, how do you know that ADCC does not become as big as Olympics and then it turns into what we don't want Olympics to be?
Because the ADCC, I don't know that. First of all, obviously I don't know, but the thing about it is that ADCC is strictly a grappling event. Like ADCC doesn't really have any other branches. You know,
you're saying.
When you get into the Olympic Committee,
it would not be influenced by other people who don't know what grappling is, essentially.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So you know, what I mean, there's not a lot that has an Olympic outlet that doesn't become kind of the gold standard, you know. So that it's and the problem with it is that, you know, the Olympic Committee is there's a lot of politics, international politics, and there's corruption and there's, you know, there's this and that. It's like, and you're having people come in on with an opinion into a committee that they may not even have any skin in the game. They may, you know, they're just there for as a political figure, as a representative of this branch of the committee that has to like keep political relations. Like it's crazy. You know, I think that's the kind of stuff that starts to become problematic.
Were you saying we have enough drama in jiu-jitsu? We don't need extra drama.
Oh man,
how the conversation started 55 minutes later. Here it is again,
dude. Why
jiu-jitsu is so dramatic? Why can't we all just get along? Why people just fight? Why do we have to like hate each other?
Man, it's because we're humans, but
is it any different than anything else?
Really? I don't know.
Probably not. Yeah.
You know what's funny though is like it exists in other martial arts. You know, like I was, dude, Filipino martial arts. Like I don't know if you guys know anything having to do with any of that. I'm very far removed from anything Filipino martial arts. I trained back in the day, but it's crazy. I've got some friends and acquaintances. And man, you talk about some drama queens as far as like this camp versus that camp and this style versus that style within. It's like, dude, just what? Why? Why? What is the point in that? And that in the gun community, you know, like I again, very far removed to really be knowledgeable, but it's like they're so campy. There's this. I think that it's when you fall in love with something that you're doing, something that's very, you're passionate about it because this thing changed my life. You know, like jiu-jitsu changed my life. In some ways, I feel like it saved my life. I hold it on such a high pedestal. It's like a religion. It's like, it's so important to me. So obviously, if you have a different opinion on what it is or should be, then screw you because you're wrong and I'm right. In my camp, and my teacher is God, and your teacher doesn't know what he's talking about. So you know that's this a little bit of a childish kind of nearsighted small world view that we kind of revert to. Even people that know better, they can still get that aspect of their personality triggered a lot when something threatens what they hold with such high esteem, you know. It's like it's the ugly sister principle. Like I can call my sister ugly, but you can't, you know? So you can't talk anything about it, you know? So but it is at the end of the day, it is really silly because when you press people about, if I have a strong opinion, like, man, screw fight sports or screw, Alliance or screw Novo, like whatever team, whatever camp, and you press me about it, it's like, and you keep peeling back the layers, I'm eventually going to have to admit that I don't have really as strong of a reason to back up that strong opinion that I have. I don't think, you know.
Does this burn out? We are so judgmental overall, and then plus this, you know, testosterone environment that, you know, it's just, it's hard to avoid. We go into, listen, we step into a room with majority is men. I mean, it is a male dominating sport, even though females are, you know, growing and the presence is, it's good to see that is being visible. But there was a lot of testosterone on the mat, and we do compete. Like the whole objective of jiu-jitsu is one, to control the environment, and two, to submit, to finish, right? And does that layer beyond the mat and this competitive environment just bridges to that? And then obviously if that comes from the top of the organization, you know, from the leadership, then obviously trickles down to everybody below them, and then it's kind of a domino effect.
It definitely has to contribute. For sure. I think that, you know, you start to look at it from that, from the competitive aspect of it. And it's, you know, and I mean, and even outside of the, on a, maybe, I don't know if it's bigger or just tangential, but it's like the thing that I've always recognized and probably at some point participated in both sides of it is like the sport versus the self-defense, you know, the reality-based fighting aspect versus the competitive sportive side of it. You know, it's like, which is the true, because you'll get like the self-defense heavy guys, I would say old school, but I mean, there's, it doesn't necessarily mean old school. There's old school sport guys, old school self-defense guys, but you get the people on both sides of the argument that are very, very particular about their side is the right side. And they start to create straw man, fallacious arguments. It's like, I'm a self-defense guy, so screw these sport people over here that are doing real jiu-jitsu. You know, like they're doing the stuff that would get you killed in a street fight. They're doing the stuff that's one dimensional, one small aspect of jiu-jitsu. They're doing a disservice to the martial art. And then you get the guys on the sport side, less common, I think, that look at the self-defense guys. And it's like, these guys are doing stuff that's not going to materialize in a fight because they're not putting the pressure behind it. They're not doing this and that. And besides, I'm not planning on getting into a fight. I don't go dumb places with dumb people and do dumb things. So I'm not really getting into street fights. You know, this is a hobby. This is a sport. This is a competitive endeavor for me. You know, it's so I don't need to know how to defend myself whenever you know, I'm doing jujitsu with a knife, you know, like I don't need to know that. I just need to know how to tap this guy in this next tournament. So, you know, it's both sides of the argument, you know, it's, and again, there's no reason for that argument. There's no reason at all. So I love it whenever I see, for example, I was just at, 2 days ago, I was in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we dropped in to take a class, just visiting to dropped in to take a class at 10th Planet Scottsdale. And it was a leg lock class, had a great time, great instruction. You know, we like did some really cool, I picked up a couple cool details that I was missing. It's my girlfriend and I were doing it. And as soon as the class ended, they had canceled other classes because they had police training come in. And I was like, huh, I bet when a lot of people think about law enforcement training for like jujitsu law enforcement training, they don't typically think 10th Planet.
No.
You're talking about, where are you cops going to train your jujitsu for your department? The same place that the stoners just walked out of, like that lit up weed in the parking lot. They think the earth is flat. And, you know, it's like, no, it's so, you know, but a lot of that's just, it's stereotyping and it's whatever, but it's cool to see that to me. It's cool to see that there is that cross section that you picture. Okay, if you're doing this aspect of jiu-jitsu primarily, it's our prejudiced nature a lot of times says that's all you're about, you know. And rarely is that the case.
This is the judgmental side of human being. You know, we create these perceptions and perspectives, and you know, we develop our own views on people, and I think that's why jiu-jitsu is so dramatic.
Yeah, for sure. It's got to be the biggest part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny,
yeah,
man.
It definitely is. So what's ahead for you? What's, you know, you've been around the block for a while now. You teach here and there. You recently moved. Are you like anchoring? Yeah. Anchoring down? Are you like,
I don't have any, I plan to make Charlotte my home indefinitely. I don't plan on, my fiance and I were anchored here, and, you know, I have access to go back home and I get to travel a lot. You know, I'm all over doing seminars, which is something that I really enjoy doing. You know, I've got a trip coming up to, let's see, where I'm going out to Utah soon. I've got a couple little seminars like just within the inside North Carolina. Maryland's coming up, and got a camp that where I'm teaching at in Costa Rica. So, you know, I mean, I'm extremely fortunate that I get these opportunities to be able to go around and teach like that. And that's something for the time being, is something I still enjoy. Like I know that traveling's going to get old, you know, eventually, but you know, that's,
so appealing about traveling? I mean, why not settle down in one place? Why not have your own place? Why not do that? I mean, you're one of those guys who likes that freedom. You enjoy that freedom. You enjoy visiting places and kind of, you know, not be attached, for lack of a better term, but why, what's so appealing about it?
Well, that's a good question. I don't 100% know. I know that I enjoy experiencing different environments and seeing what's out there and the way that different people are doing different things. And also, I enjoy like getting to share as much as I can with as many people as I can. I love to walk in a room in a place that, you know, I either haven't been or have been maybe once or twice before, and people are open to receiving information, you know, like it, and there's not that there's anything at all wrong. There's definitely something as beautiful and even more beautiful in a lot of ways of going in the same place over and over again to share. Cause that's basically what I've done my entire life. It's like, you know, again, I was in Kentucky my entire life at the exact same academy my entire life. I was just the senior instructor there. I wasn't the owner, but you know, I had thousands and thousands of students over the years, you know, different students over the years. And it's nice because the obvious benefit with that is you get to work closely with people repeatedly and build and build and build and build, you know, relationships and, you know, jujitsu. So that part is great. And that's what I'm working on here, you know, like getting settled in and getting, you know, getting my regular training partners established for my own benefit, my own growth, but then also having more regular students, you know, that I teach. And so I'd like to have the best of both worlds. Like, it's like, I like to experience new things and new variety a lot, but, I like to see the world, you know? So that's, to me, is the best of all things. I've never wanted my own brick and mortar. I never wanted my own building. I've seen too much what goes into that from the administrative and business side. And I was like, that doesn't appeal to me. I know how my brain works and my brain's not built for it. I'm not.
So what you're saying is there will not be a Knight Jiu-Jitsu Academy in a one place.
I'm not saying never. you know, I don't like to say never, but it's not the plan right now for sure. So it's, you know, sometimes I'll think about that and I think, man, this and that would be nice with that. It really would. But you know, at the same time, I kind of like what I'm doing, and it's, there's a lot of it that I really enjoy, you know, and I think there's still a lot of growth to be had in the way that I do things right now without having to do something so different as to start my own building, you know? So
good for you.
I don't know. Nobody.
I think life is too short for us. All of us do what we don't like. And there is like interacting with thousands of people, you know, coming through doors and seeing and all this, there is a lot of individuals out there who not forget about not enjoying, but they really dislike their life, their job, what they do and how they do it. And I personally feel I'm a lucky cat. Like I do what I love. I would not trade it. You know, Gary is funny. We can make fun of him. You know, like, it doesn't get better than this. It really doesn't get better than this. Gary, how are you?
I'm fine. Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you're talking about, and I need to make some moves.
Gary is one of those guys who stays quiet for the whole episode, and then he will, like, stab you. You know, like,
never the guest.
Just building it up. Just the host. Waiting for the time to pounce.
He will just wait for the right moment. Yeah.
That's good. That's good jujitsu, man.
That's right there.
It actually doesn't serve me well on the mat. No, because you end up putting yourself in too many bad situations that you got to fight out of. But it's great for conversation and making fun.
Eli, we've been at this for over an hour. I mean, it's unbelievable how quickly that passes by. But before we start wrapping this up, what we do, which we haven't done our last episode, we started this later on. But we have a question for you from our previous guest. He had no idea that you will be answering it. So think of it as question in blind completely. Some of them are ridiculous. Oh. Some of them are funny. Some of them are deep and serious. And so let's just see where this is going to take us.
Yeah. Cool. We've touched on ADCC quite a bit in this conversation, or it was mentioned quite a bit. But Jason Rao wants to know who's going to win there in the absolute.
Oh, man. Gosh, I haven't even looked at who all is going to be in the absolute. Oh, man. That's going to be tough. Whew.
Let me reframe. Who do you consider to be the best of the best, the GOAT of the present time? And
it's tough, man. Gordon is essentially out of the picture right now. Right. So it's like, can't really say that, man. It's hard not to say Marigali. Like, I would be tempted. I don't know if Marigali is doing the absolute ADCC this year, but, that would be hard not to say Marigali. Other than that, there's guys that could pull it off that, you know, I think, but that's the thing is, like, there's so many people out there that it wouldn't even be an upset. It'd be unexpected, but it wouldn't be an upset, you know. But I think that right now Nicholas Marigali is the probably the best of the best out there. Gi and no gi, honestly.
Yeah, I think
you heard it here.
Yeah, you heard it here. Yeah, it is interesting. I think especially with the rule set the ADCC introduces, it's more of a wrestling and grappling driven versus jiu-jitsu, and the way how, you know, the point viewing is being done and all that. It really introduces an opportunity for a larger group of people to even upset the event versus the expected winner to just deliver. So I love watching that stuff.
Oh man, it's crazy. It's like you and people are learning so much so fast too. Like I remember this weekend watching Nikki Ryan submit JT Torres. JT Torres hasn't been submitted since 2013. Like he has not been submitted since 2013. And I don't think that it'd be hard to say that Nikki Ryan was the favorite in that competition. I don't think anybody would have said that. I think people would have put their money. I would have put my money on JT Torres. But maybe not.
You know what's interesting about this? That I think the way I remember jiu-jitsu starting all of this and just growing up and then maturing in a jiu-jitsu environment, oftentimes, way back in the day, oftentimes when we went into a competition, we played our A game. This is what we were encouraged to do. This is what you do well. This is what you're going to do, regardless who's in front of you. Today, that's clearly evolving to a strategic chess game. This is who my opponent is. I'm going to pick this apart. I'm going to find weaknesses. I'm going to find a strategic way to literally disable them and then win the match within the rule set that are in front of me. We no longer play our A game. We play a strategic game to win, to succeed. And I think this might be the first step into the professional arena, because that's how true sports are played. You watch football, you watch basketball, you don't play your A game. You play a game against your opponent and you pick them apart.
Yeah. And I think that's, and you also have to be so multifaceted in your abilities, you know? So you'll see guys with great wrestling go out and pull guard. And it's because it's like, who was it? It was Pena and, who was it this weekend? Philippe Pena and, Lovato, right?
Oh, Lovato, yeah, and, Lovato Jr., yeah.
And Lovato pulled guard a couple different times. Like, they wrestled for the most part, and they were standing and everything, but it's like they knew, and then Lovato pulled guard. And it's like, okay, it was a strategy. It's like, okay, we're gonna battle for takedowns. I'm going to look for this, this time. And then it's like, when we hit this minute mark, if I haven't taken down, secured a position, match is still going on, I'm pulling guard at this minute mark. And so the more and more, and it's just like the early days of MMA, days of MMA, you had a team that trained with you, but you had a coach. Now you've got your striking coach, you've got your grappling coach, you've got your, it's like, it's looking more and more like organized sports. It's like, you've got, like NFL, you've got this coach for this, this coach for this, this coach for this, you got special teams. It's like, so yeah, you've got, except, you're combining a team into one person, so it's fascinating to see, just like what you were saying. I think that that's you've got to be that, because the caliber is so high, and the potential for different opponents is so great. So you have to know how to approach each individual fight.
I love it so much. Ahead of us, and we are just starting, at least in my book. It's going to be interesting to see how all of this is unfolding, and it's going to be interesting to see how this art sport, this fascinating jiu-jitsu environment continues evolving. Eli, absolutely. Before we disconnect, you have large internet presence. Where can anybody find you? I mean, where are you available? Share some of the links, websites, YouTube channels, and so on. So if anybody wants to connect with you directly, they have the freedom. And as always, we will post all the links in the show notes of this episode.
Yes. I think the biggest platform is YouTube. That's my biggest thing. There's not really that much of a social media component to it, but yeah, YouTube, Knight Jiu-Jitsu, Instagram, Knight Jiu-Jitsu, basically Knight Jiu-Jitsu on any of the socials. So Instagram, Facebook. Patreon, you know, that one actually pays me money. So that's a good one to promote probably. So Naijujutsu on Patreon. And then, you know, my instructionals, you know, Eli Knight on BJJ Fanatics are where most of my instructionals are. So yeah, all those things right there. Yeah.
Awesome. So if you guys want to connect with Eli, please do. Phenomenal research. Phenomenal research for your jiu-jitsu, especially as you continue exploring this amazing thing that we all love. Make sure you reach out to him. Make sure you watch his stuff. Make sure you support it. Eli, thanks for being here. Thanks for being here for a second time. Four years later, and another amazing conversation. So we do appreciate all this. Gary?
Yeah, we won't wait for four more years. If we're still
I was going to ask, yeah. Do I need to go ahead and schedule for 2028?
Yeah, just put it on the calendar.
It's just like Olympics. Every 4 years, every 4 years, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for doing it. Thanks for just, the, you know, I probably said this before too, just the level-headed aspect that you bring to everything here. Cause it does get, jiu-jitsu does get silly, and it's great to have people that just kind of are even keel about it all, whether, you know, all the aspects of it. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Eli, let's wrap it up for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. And we'll be watching from sidelines as you continue traveling and impacting jiu-jitsu.
All right. Thank you guys.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.